Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
How did you find out that your name had been mentioned in the debate?
Oh, I got a million tweets.
Okay.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my first guest today is not Big Bird from PBS, Big Bird there on Saturday Night Live. Or was that a Big Bird imposter on that stage? No, it's Big Bird's PBS colleague, Jim Lehrer, no relation, executive editor of the NewsHour and the moderator of last week's presidential debate, coming under rare scrutiny himself. Don't tell Jim Carville that, by the way.
It's not Jim Lehrer. The President Obama was sitting right there. He could have confronted Governor Romney on any number of issues and drawn a distinction. Yes.
Carville on ABC This Week yesterday. Jim Lehrer's book about presidential debates, now out in paperback, is called Tension City, Inside the Presidential Debates. Hi, Jim. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you, Brian.
By way of background, before we get to last week's debate, you write in the new introduction to your book that this year was already a breakthrough year for presidential debates. Why did you think so?
Well, because they were all Republican primary debates leading up to these fall debates. And those debates truly sorted through the field. One debate after another, there would be a front runner, and then that front runner wouldn't do well in a debate, and they're bye-bye. And the fact that Romney went through all of those and each set of new front runners and remained near the top or on the top, and then finally got the nomination. The debates were critical in sorting through the field.
You call those debates unkempt, the good, the bad, and the ugly. You compare them to game shows. You still think they're good for democracy run that way?
Well, I think each debate stands on its own for up or down. I think the total picture that people got if they the other thing is they in the past these primary debates drew very, very small audiences, but in 2012 and in this Republican race they drew large audiences, not only among Republicans but everybody wanted to see these people. It became very, very they were interesting, in some cases even entertaining. In my opinion, in some cases they were designed too much for entertainment value than for substance value. But my point is that no matter, even if you're asking what's your favorite color or sing me your favorite song, you learn something about that individual. And that's what the total of those debates were. That's why I think they're of value.
Although I wonder sometimes, do the debates, any debates, pick winners and losers on the right criteria? The job of president is not to match wits with opponents. It's to create jobs and conduct foreign policy and things like that, which require completely different skills.
I disagree. I think, yes, it's to create jobs, but it's also – and all the other things you just mentioned, and many other things we could mention.
Of course.
But it has to be done with the support of the American people. And if that person cannot articulate his or her positions, then you're not going to have the support of the American people. One of the qualifications for office is to be able to articulate, is to be able to speak clearly. And to speak in a way that people that it's accessible and that people are with you. So I think the ability to handle challenges to your authority, challenges to your points of view.
It's a
communications thing. And like if you're going to be a left-handed baseball pitcher for the Yankees, you better be left-handed or forget it. If you're going to be president of the United States, you better be able to stand up on your feet or sit down on your bottom and talk. And talk to the American people and talk to people who ask you questions in journalism and whatever.
Yeah. Before we get off the Republican primary debates, like I was surprised that Rick Perry basically got run out of the race after forgetting that he would eliminate the energy department, right? He was trying to list the three departments that he promised to abolish if elected president. He couldn't remember the energy department. And for some reason, that disqualified him from the presidency. And I'm like, so what?
Well, so what? For instance, Bill Clinton, it's in my book, Tension City, but because I was able to interview all these candidates who appeared in presidential debates, Bill Clinton said that he wasn't speaking of that, but he was speaking of gaffes. That Perry thing would fall into that category.
Yeah.
Clinton's point is that a gaffe only matters if it is a confirming gaffe. In other words, if it confirms something you already thought. In Rick Perry's case, the only reason it mattered was because it was already in the wind. This guy really wasn't up to this. He really didn't even – if, for instance, if Mitt Romney had forgotten I think nobody would have paid any attention to it. And this was Clinton's point about George H.W. Bush looking at his watch and stuff like that. It confirmed something that was already there. And he said, if I looked at my watch, you know, in those debates back then, nobody would have paid any attention to it. And I think it's exactly what happened with Rick Perry.
Jim Lehrer, my guest on WNYC, our phone number, if you'd like to talk to Jim Lehrer, 212-433-WNYC. Of course, we can always take your questions and comments on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or 212-433-WNYC if you want to call in, 433-9692. So that was pretty newsworthy last week. If you were going to add a new chapter about it to your book, Tension City, how do you think you would frame it?
I would frame it that this was the first time in the history of American political campaigning where an incumbent president of the United States stood eyeball to eyeball to a challenger, and they talked at each other, and they talked about things that mattered, that each was allowed to challenge the other and respond to that challenge.
This is about the format.
That's the format. Never before. All the debates up to now, and I've moderated a lot of them, we're all very controlled. 2 minutes, 2 minute answers, a 1 minute response, a 90 second this, and we go to another question, whatever. It's and this campaign, 2012, you talk about a canned campaign. Both sides, the speeches are canned, the commercials are canned. This debate on Wednesday night was the first unrehearsed, uncanned event of this campaign.
And it was the attraction of this format that basically lured you out of debate retirement? Is that a fact that has been reported?
It is an absolute fact. I had said after, when I wrote Tension City, when it first came out, I said to anybody who cared, and most particularly to my wife and three daughters, that no more of this. I've done that, and I'm not going to do any more. But the commission came to me with this. They thought there was a necessity to have a real debate. Let's see if we can try to have a real debate. With not a moderated, simultaneous one-on-one interviews with the candidates, which is what they've been for all practical purposes, and set up a situation where the challenging is done not by the moderator, but is done by the candidates. And the candidates either up to it or they're not up to it. They're either ready to go or they're not ready to go. And so I said, you bet. And it took a while for me to say, you bet. I was reluctant to do it because I knew it was going to be hard. And I knew even if it worked well, I was going to be criticized. There's no way in this new world you're criticized about everything you do anyhow, so it doesn't really matter. So I knew all of that, but I am sitting here talking to you now, I have absolutely no second thoughts about it. I think it's a major development in the growth of presidential debates, and I just hope it continues to grow.
So you're ready to hear from a disgruntled Democrat?
Absolutely.
Reba in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, I'd like to know why you didn't make any question about the Romney's comments about the 47%, which I think both sides would have welcomed. Of course, Obama for obvious reasons, and Romney in order to clarify what he meant.
Well, the reason that I didn't ask that is because I felt that those are the questions that the two candidates were to ask. I was not there to question people. I was there to allow the candidates to question each other. And I didn't have certainly I could have brought up the 47%. I could have brought up, there are all kinds of things I could have brought up. But I wanted to put it out there in front of the two candidates and let them, if 47% was to be brought up in a way that was unattractive to Romney, then it was Obama's responsibility to do that. And if Romney had something he wanted to bring up that was unattractive to Obama, that was Romney's responsibility to do that. And I did not, my view of this, and this was the view of the debate commission and the one I signed on, and I feel very, very, I'm very comfortable about it and not apologetic about it, is that I was not there to do the challenging. I was there to facilitate the challenging. And if they couldn't, if they didn't want to do it, then I wasn't going to do that work for them. And that's my answer. And I have no apology. And I'm not apologetic about it. In fact, I'm actually very positive about it.
In fact, though, here's the dilemma. If you think this is a dilemma, if one candidate lies or says questionable things about his plans or his record, and the other guy chooses not to go after him for his own reasons, in this case, perhaps because Obama was more afraid of looking too aggressive than he was of Romney going unchallenged. In that scenario of candidates' failure to challenge, the American people do not get a shot at the truth unless the moderator does it. Do you think that's a problem?
I couldn't disagree with you more. This is 90 minutes in a campaign that's already been underway for a year. And it's going to go on for several more weeks. This was just 90 minutes of the two candidates showing who they are and what they were willing. You know, if Obama made a decision he didn't want to do that, all right, now we know that. He made his own decision to do that, and he did it for his own reasons. And now he's living with it. And Romney made decisions that he's having to live with in terms of that that debate. This is not the whole campaign. This was just 90 minutes of it. And I hear what you're saying, but I disagree with you.
Gina in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Jim Lehrer. Hello.
Hi. I don't know. Maybe some of what I wanted to know you've already covered. But I wanted to know if you were bothered by Mitt Romney's interruption of your questioning. I mean, sometimes you didn't even get to answer the questions and
ask the question.
And that he also, he just jumped in whenever, and I thought he was like a bully trying to take over everything, and you were trying to moderate.
Did you experience it that way?
No. I mean, we all experienced it, but everybody saw it. So if somebody was turned off by the way Mitt Romney interrupted me, then they saw it. See, my point is that everybody – there were 67 million people who watched that. And there's no spin on this afterward. You can't spin something that everybody saw. And everybody has a reaction. And she was upset about the way Romney interrupted me and whatever. Well, she can have her own view of that and her own opinion of Romney as a result of that. But it happened. And the focus is on what happened, and I have no complaints along those lines.
So if people saw him interrupting you and thought that was rude or too aggressive or whatever they might have thought, then that's part of what he's demonstrating.
So be it. Judge it and react accordingly.
You write in the book about being criticized after the Bush-Gore debate that you moderated in 2000, really on very similar grounds. And, of course, you wrote this before last week's event, not being aggressive enough and not accentuating the differences in your questions. And you write that you don't take criticism well, and spent a full day in real hell after that debate and the blowback that you got. How would you compare this year's criticism to 2000?
Well, the blowback is the difference between, say, night and day.
Really?
No. I mean, there's been huge reaction to Wednesday night.
Yes.
It hasn't all been negative. In fact, the overwhelming majority has been positive in terms of the debate itself and my little part in it. But in this world, this new world, a 24/7 news cycle, and everybody's got a tweet and a Twitter and a whatever, it's everybody can react. And I don't have enough time to read all of that. I've had thousands and thousands and thousands of reactions, and there have been thousands and thousands and thousands of reactions to the debate itself. I mean, don't have anything to do with me.
Yes.
And
but the criticism seems so similar to what you wrote about being criticized for in 2000.
Sure. But you see, that criticism is that's like criticizing, here again, a left-handed pitcher for throwing left-handed.
That's
I
you.
See the role of a moderator. Yes. I see not only my role, but a role of a moderator to stay out of the way and not be the subject of the debate. And you know that. We talked about it before.
Absolutely.
And I've written it in a book.
Yep.
It when you're talking – my only problem is that if people are talking about me, and they are, to some degree, either positively or negatively, that bothers me because I don't think it should be about the candidates. And 99% of the comments now, let's face it, are about what happened between the two candidates, not about me.
Are you taking it any better?
Well, yes. In this case, I'm taking it a lot better because I feel so good about what the end result was. I really think this was a major step for the dialogue in a presidential campaign, and my small part in it, I feel good about it.
Jim in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Jim Lehrer. Hello.
Yes, Mr. Lehrer. I wanted to ask you what, in your opinion, what you thought the President Obama's performance confirmed in the voters' minds about him.
You know, Jim, those are the kinds of questions I'm going to leave to the people who are watching. I'm not a pundit. And also keep in mind, too, please, that I was very close to those two men. And what that debate is, that and these debates, all of them, but this one in particular, obviously, was being watched on television. And how these things come over on television to you and to others, Jim, is what it's all about. What my impressions were sitting there, I was so focused on the mechanics of getting this thing on the air and moving and all the things that I had to do. I was not focused at all. My mind is not capable of focusing on that many things at a time. One of the things I just don't focus on is, hey, is this guy doing well? Is this guy doing poorly or whatever? I leave that to others.
So if I were to ask you point blank, did Obama look as bad to you sitting right up there, as he did to most of the pundits, your answer is, A, I had no impression, and B, if I did, I wouldn't tell you because it's not my role?
You got it, Brian. Absolutely.
Which one is it, A or B?
Both.
Come on.
Well, no, I had all kinds of impressions, but they were impressions that were not judgmental impressions. And after the fact, you know, and people were talking about it and all of that, and I remembered this, remembered that, and you know, but I don't. I'm with everybody else on this in terms of. In fact, I'm in a worse position than everybody else because I didn't watch it on television. Someday I'm going to go back and look at it, and then I'll give you an answer, maybe.
Let me ask you it in a different way, then.
Okay.
Because in your book, you write about the Obama-McCain debate that you moderated 4 years ago, and on the president's body language and demeanor, the now president, you said the main event of that debate was about cool versus edge. So what did you mean regarding Obama in that debate?
Well, in that debate, Obama, remember, was not that well known. And the question was, this is the first debate with McCain, the question was, could he handle the presidency? Could he handle being president? Did he have a temperament? Was he cool enough? And smooth enough, et cetera.
And he was cool and McCain
and
was edgy.
McCain was edgy. McCain was angry and he was fidgety. And people saw that. And you could go back to an earlier point you made, Brian. People said, well, why does that matter? I don't know why it matters, but it does. The American people want to know about these people who are going to be president. And they want to know about them as individuals, in addition to what their views are on particular issues.
Competing styles, cool versus edgy.
Yeah.
How would you compare Obama in the debate then to Obama last week?
Well, Brian, that's a great question. I'm going to have to think about that. I just didn't thought about it in those terms. It's a terrific question, and I'm going to dodge it.
All right. By the way, the Democrats had the impression that Romney was rolling you on the clock. But I just want to point out that I was watching on CNN some of the time where they were running side-by-side continuous clocks. That is, how many minutes each candidate got. And Obama actually got a little more total time.
That's right.
So I'll put that out there for the record.
I appreciate that.
Did you have clocks like that in front of you?
Yes. I had all kinds of clocks. And I also had marvelous voice of a marvelous executive producer of the debates, a guy named Marty Sletsky in my ear, the top professional there is. And I had all kinds of information as to what I was doing and where I was at any given moment. And I had to make some decisions on my own. There were times when I could have played big shot, Bigfoot anchor man, and, hey, hey, stop, hey, hey, you know, obey me. You know, and then I, wait a minute, these guys are talking to each other. This is what this was all about. So I just backed off. And but I knew what to do. I knew where the time limits were, and I had enough information to know what I was doing. Whether I was right or wrong, that's somebody else's judgment. But at the time, I knew what I was doing.
Newt Gingrich is fond of proposing what he calls 90-minute Lincoln-Douglas style debates, no moderator. Do you think that could be as good or even better? Then we'd really be out of the way.
Well, Bob Schieffer suggested the same thing. I mean, Schieffer, you know, has done presidential debates, and he's doing the last one with Obama and Romney
on foreign policy.
And on foreign policy, yeah. You know, I don't know if I'd go that far, but I think we took a step in that direction on Wednesday night, and I think that's a very good thing. I mean, it's not about a moderator following up and asking tough questions. You can do that in interviews, and that's a different step in the process.
It would be an entire different viewer experience of you if it was Romney being interviewed on the NewsHour.
Yes, absolutely right. And if you were interviewing them, you know, on your program, and sitting down with Romney, then sitting down with Obama, even sitting down in simultaneous interviews. I mean, it's just different. But that's really important.
Another question that people are asking is, if this was the official domestic policy debate, why no social issues like the so-called war on women or gay marriage or immigration or guns? Many people have said when you were right in the shadow there of the Aurora, Colorado massacre.
I had all kinds of questions about every issue that you raised, that you just mentioned. I was ready to go everywhere. So I had to make some decisions. I had to cut, and I had to cut from the bottom. I had decided to cut from the bottom or wherever. And once we accomplished what we hoped we could accomplish. I paid a price for that. There's no question. And that's my major personal disappointment. There are all the things I didn't get to. And I regret that very much. But there's an answer to that. Just have another 90 minutes and another 90 minutes of the same format. We can get them all the same way.
There's no coordination, though, among the various moderators or teams like Candy Crowley. You're going to take more of the social issues in your town hall debate. I'm going to do more of the tax policy and things.
No, none of that. None of that. I made the decision that, and it was my decision, that the number one issue facing the country were the various elements of the economy. And so once I got in that, and it became much longer than I had intended. There's no question about it. And a lot of things went by the boards, and I regret that.
All right. One more clip from the debate. Here is Governor Romney talking about Big Bird and you.
I'm sorry, Jim. I'm going to stop the subsidy to PBS. I'm going to stop other things. I like PBS. I love Big Bird. I actually like you, too. But I'm not going to keep on spending money on things to borrow money from China to pay for.
Now, usually in a debate, people who are criticized by name get a chance to respond. Were you tempted?
No. He'd said that many times before.
Sure.
And it would have been—
Not mentioning you, though.
I know. But it would have been dumb and inappropriate for me to say a word. I just smiled and let it go.
Do you do this? Do you make a case? Would you make a case for PBS funding, or is that not your role?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The funding for PBS is needed more now than ever before. We've got a revolution going on in the way we get information in this country. We have the 24/7 news cycle. We need the kind of journalism that's practiced on PBS and the kind of programming we do on PBS now more than ever. And the support not only of the federal government but everybody else is more important now than ever before. And the case can be made, but that was not the place for me to make it.
Jim Lehrer, his book, now out in paperback with an updated introduction for 2012, is Tension City, Inside the Presidential Debates. Any closing argument for our listeners?
No, I just want to say thank you, Uncle Brian, for for having me on again. No closing argument other than thank you. It's always a pleasure to be with you, my friend.
Okay. Well, no relation, but you're a credit to the family shield.
Thank you, sir, for coming on.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, who has seen many a presidential debate, and we'll talk about whether all this matters and, as far as we could tell so far, how much to the actual race. Stay tuned.